From the University of Texas at Austin, KUT Radio, this is In Black America.
You're absolutely right about that's not being our first name. Our first name was the Four Ames. We wanted our name to be, to signify what we were about. We were aiming for the moon, the stars, you know, to be top flight, to be one of the best groups, because we felt like we could be. And so we kept that name from 1954 when we started to 1956, which was our first real recording contract, and that was with Chess Records. So we were just about to record. We were down in the studio, and Leonard and Phil Chess came down and said, "Well, fellas, I'm sorry to say you're going to have to change your name." He said, "There's a group out there called the Four Ames." I said, "Oh, yeah, I've heard them." I said, "But people going to know the difference between us Ames and the Four Ames." He said, "No, you have to change your name." So our musical director, his name was Morris King, kept asking questions. How do you get the Four Ames? We started telling him about all the things we were looking for. We were shooting for the stars and trying to get on top, all that kind of stuff. And he said, "Well, what about the Four Tops?"
Abdul Duke Fekia, founding member of the Four Tops. The vocal quartet were among the original stable of stars that helped establish the Motown sound. The Four Tops was the main vocal group for the very successful songwriting production team of Holland Dozier Holland. 1 year after signing with Motown, they began their hit streak with Baby, I Need Your Lovin', which peaked at number 11. Over the next 8 years, they made more appearances on the charts with memorable songs including Asta Lonely, Standing in the Shadow of Love, and I Can't Help Myself, Sugar Pie Honey Bunch, which went to number one. This past spring, Fekia took part in the Summit on Race in America and the opening of the Grammy Museum's new exhibit, Motown, The Sound of Young America, at the LBJ Presidential Library on the campus of the University of Texas at Austin. I'm Johnny O. Hanson, Jr., and welcome to another edition of In Black America. On this week's program, Duke Fekia of the Four Tops and Mary Wilson of the Supremes, In Black America.
Then, like, I think Diane was 13, I was 13, Florence may have been 13 and a half. She was 6 months older than us, right? And so we rehearsed with Eddie and Paul as the Primes, and for maybe a couple of weeks, it was only a couple of weeks, and pretty soon we started doing local dates at the Gold Coast Theater in Detroit, the Fox Theater, just little things. We weren't recording, and we had a guitarist who later became the Miracles guitarist, Marv Tarplin, but he was ours first. So we did all these little local record hops, right? And then we were on the show with a lot of other recording artists. Mm-hmm. So we said to ourselves, now we're 15 years old now. Right. We said to ourselves, maybe we should try to think of recording. And that's when we saw the Miracles on TV. And so we said, you know, Diane said, "I know Smokey from a former neighborhood. Maybe I can ask him, you know, if he can listen to the group." And we said, "Okay, good." And so we got to call him up and do whatever. And he set up an interview at Claudette Robin's house. And we went over there, Robinson, I should say. And the Miracles listened to us and said, "Oh, you guys are really good."
Mary Wilson, best-selling author, motivational speaker, businesswoman, former U.S. cultural ambassador, and founding member of the Supremes. The Supremes may be considered the world's most famous female group. From 1964 to 1969, they recorded 12 number one songs. Starting out as the Primettes, they were determined to record on Motown Records. Hanging out at the recording studio after school every day, They finally signed with Motown on January 15, 1961. From 1961 to 1963, it wasn't all peaches and cream. The Supremes couldn't find a hit, but their fortunes changed in late 1963 when the hitmakers, Howlin' Dozier and Howlin' Penn, when the love light started shining through your eyes. From there, five number one consecutive hits would follow. This past spring, Wilson took part in the Summit on Race in America and the opening of the Grammy Museum's new exhibit, Motown, The Sound of Young America, at the LBJ Presidential Library on the campus of the University of Texas at Austin. Wilson sat down with In Black America inside the exhibit for this exclusive conversation.
I grew up outside of Michigan, outside of Detroit, not in the middle there. And so it was the suburbs by the Detroit River, in which was very, very, it was a wonderful place to grow up. Then when I finally moved in with my real mom, because I was living there with my aunt and uncle, we had to move into the projects. For me, it was kind of a step down because I had grown up, you know, outside of Detroit, Michigan, and we had our own home, and my aunt and uncle had their car. They had two jobs. You know, we were like really well off, mm-hmm. In the 40s and the 50s. Mm-hmm. So when I had to move in with my mom, however, it was great because I met my brother and my sister and my mom, my real mom. And at first, I was like, you know, I felt kind of put down because I felt adults lied to me about who I was.
Okay.
But then in the projects, in the Brewster projects in Detroit, and coming there with my mom and my new brother and sister, I found something that was joyful, let's put it that way. All the people, there were lots of people. I wasn't used to all those people. Mm-hmm. And everybody was singing in the streets and they were dancing, you know, and it became not a put down for me. It was like great because now I was really being with people and I enjoyed it. That's when I met Florence and Diane and we started singing.
Now, you and Florence hooked up prior to you all meeting Diane. Tell us about that relationship early on.
Well, you know, when Florence and I met, we both were in elementary school. Mm-hmm. We all lived in the Brewster Projects, and Diane lived there, too, with her family. However, Florence and I went to the same elementary school, and Diane was kind of went to another school, so we didn't really know her. And one day at school, they said they're going to have a little show, and anyone who wanted to, you know, sing in the show joined up. Well, I never thought I was a singer. However, I was in every choir, glee club, whatever. But I thought everybody woke up singing. So I didn't know it was a talent, is what I'm saying. Anyway, I had just seen Frankie Lyman and the Teenagers on some TV show. And so when I signed up, I said, I'm going to sing, you know, Frankie Lyman and the Teenagers song. And I pantomimed, actually, mm-hmm. to their song, I'm Not a Juvenile Delinquent. Well, on the same show, now we're in the fifth grade. On the same show, Florence was on it. And I didn't know her either. She just lived in the projects. You know, there are thousands of people who live right. in the projects. So you see people, you don't know them. So anyway, she sings this song. She comes up there and she says, Ave Maria. And I'm like, whoa, she had such a huge, beautiful mm-hmm. voice. And like, she's only 12 or 13 too. Here we are. So afterwards, she and I got together and she says, wow, you had the crowd going. You were really like, oh. And I said, your voice is beautiful. And we said, everyone's starting these little groups. Let's you know, if anyone asks us, let's kind of remember each other. And we walked home from school. We became best friends. Next couple of weeks, Florence ran up to me and she said, these two guys, Eddie Kendricks and Paul Williams mm-hmm. were putting a group together, and her sister was dating their manager, and they asked her if she wanted to be in a group. And so in the meantime, someone else had asked Diana across the street. So it all kind of happened simultaneously. You know, it wasn't like weeks or weeks before we met. And so Diane said yes, and then we walked over to the guy's apartment down by the Flame Show Bar, all mm-hmm. of us, the three of us, and we talked about becoming friends on that day. And that's kind of how we got together.
How long were you all singing together prior to you all actually going to any audition?
Well, we were then, like, I think Diane was 13, I was 13, Florence may have been 13 and a half. Yeah. She was 6 months older than us, right? Mm-hmm. And so we rehearsed with Eddie and Paul as the primes, and for maybe a couple of weeks, it was only a couple of weeks, and pretty soon we started doing local dates at the Gold Coast Theater in Detroit, the Fox Theater, just little things. We weren't recording, and we had a guitarist who later became the Miracles guitarist, Marv Tarplin, but he was ours first, so we did all these little local record hops, right? And then we were on the show with a lot of other recording artists. Mm-hmm. So we said to ourselves, now we're 15 years old now. Right. We said to ourselves, maybe we should try to think of recording. And that's when we saw the Miracles on TV, Claudette Robinson, you know, Robert, Bobby Rogers, and Pete Moore, Ron White. And so we said, you know, Diane said, I know Smokey from a former neighborhood. Maybe I can ask him, you know, if he can listen to the group. And we said, okay, good. And so we got her to call him up and do whatever. And he set up an interview at Claudette's house, Claudette Robinson's house. And we went over there, Robinson, I should say. And the Miracles listened to us and said, oh, you guys are really good. They say, your guitars are good, too. And that's when we lost our guitars. But anyway, an audition was set up for Mr. Gordy, and that's how we eventually ended up there. But that's another long story, too. You got to read my book to know the whole story.
There was more than three, the final three, which mm-hmm. is what was settled on. Who were the other, I think, two more prior to that before Diane, Florence, and yourself actually formed the Supremes?
What happened was we were, when we met Eddie and Paul, I'm sorry I didn't say that, one of the other girls who was dating one of the guys, Betty McGlon, was mm-hmm. there. So she made up the four of us that same day. We became the Primettes, and we were four. So but Betty stayed with us for like a year. I think she was a year and a half older than us. She was a little older, and she got married after that first year. And after that, we got another girl who was recommended by Melvin of the Temptations. They were Otis Williams and the Distance still. And so Melvin said, I know a girl who would fit right in with you, and her name is Barbara Martin. And so Barbara joined us, and for another year or so, we went to Motown. We auditioned at Motown, and Barbara was there for that. In fact, Barbara was on our first album, Meet the Supremes. She was on most of those songs. And she was a Supreme. She had signed as a Supreme. So there were four Supremes. People are not aware of that.
We'll be back with more in Black America after this message. Now on with our conversation. What was it like that first time you all went in the studio to record?
The first time we went into the studio, first of all, we recorded not at Motown first. We recorded at Lupine Records first. Okay. And that was a record label that was with Wilson Pickett was on it, mm-hmm. the Falcons, and Eddie Floyd was there. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we actually backed up a lot of those recordings with Eddie Floyd, but we didn't really care for the company that much mm-hmm. because we had already seen Motown. And we finally recorded I Want a Guy. Mm-hmm. That was our first recording. We were absolutely, I can't even say happy is the word. You know, here's what I tell a lot of people. We were three little black girls who dared to dream mm-hmm. at a time when dreams did not come true for black people. We really were. And I don't think we had in our minds we wanted to be stars. That wasn't what people wanted in those days. We just wanted to sing, and we found each other, and we were happy, and we knew that this was special. And so we did Dare to Dream, and when we recorded that record, I Want a Guy, it changed my life because I knew then, wow, this is something very special.
Now, you had an opportunity to attend college, but you thought about that dream.
Our families, they allowed us to sing mm-hmm. because it gave us something to do. We were girls, pretty, not on the street running wild, you know, so parents wanted to protect you. Say, oh, this seems safe, so they can do that. Right. However, when it came time to graduate from high school, mm-hmm. They thought we were going to go on and get a job right. or go to college. Mm-hmm. College first, but get a job too. And so I remember telling Eddie Holland, I said, hey, if we don't get a hit record, we're going to have to go to college. He says, well, we're going to get a hit record. And that's when, yeah, they started really being serious about us and knowing mm-hmm. that we were serious. And they came up with our first hit record. But it was about our eighth or ninth release, I should mm-hmm. say that.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about that Motown experience.
The Motown experience for us came after the fact. I want to first say that the three of us, you know, the four Primettes and the three Supremes, we came from families that taught us that when you walk out this door, you represent the black community. We always had the great example of being a woman, being not just a woman, but being a female who, you know, we knew what we were supposed to do in life. So blackness for us was very, very important. Mm-hmm. And so at Motown, we were very fortunate that when we walked into their door, they recognized that we were not just three girls who wanted to be singers. We really were special ladies, and it had come from our background, from our families. So when we walked to Motown's door, they recognized that we were a little special, you know. And thank God they decided to start this artist development program. We were very fortunate to go there and have our mentor, Mrs. Maxine Powell, mm-hmm. who taught us. She says, I'm not an etiquette teacher now. You're finishing, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, I teach you how it's all inside, how to be beautiful inside. And she always said, you beautiful people. Mm-hmm. And then she told us, one day you're going to sing before kings and queens. Now, we're only 16 years old, okay? Right. But anyway, we eventually, yeah, we started singing before kings and queens, hanging out with them. And so, you know, it showed us that this didn't just happen. You know, to me, it was, we were chosen. We were chosen to do what we did. And I think I'm very proud of it. I spoke with Whoopi Goldberg lately. In fact, she wrote the opening to my next book, mm-hmm. Supreme Glamour. It's all about the Supremes gowns. And she said that when she was young and she saw us on TV and, you know, saw these three beautiful black women, it gave her something to aspire to. So, you know, it's something I'm very proud of it. You know, I don't take it lightly. If I had not been a Supreme, I would have wanted to be. But I am one.
Mary Wilson, founding member of the Supremes.
Another day, another night, I long to hold you tight, 'cause I'm so lonely.
Not know that in the 1960s, most male and mixed vocal groups were led by a tenor, but not the Four Tops. They were fronted by Levi Stubbs, a baritone. The Four Tops were among the original stable of stars with Motown Records. From 1954 to 1997, the group original personnel didn't change. Founded at the Four Ames, Stubbs and Duke Fakia first met at neighborhood football games. Little did he know, Stubbs was a singer. Here's a footnote. Stubbs lived in the same neighborhood I grew up in, and Fakia and I graduated from Pershing High School. In 1963, the Four Tops signed with Motown Records. This past spring, Fakia took part in the Summit on Race in America and the opening of the Grammy Museum's new exhibit, Motown, The Sound of Young America, at the LBJ Presidential Library on the campus of the University of Texas at Austin. Fakia sat down with In Black America inside the exhibit for this exclusive conversation.
To me, it was a lot of fun. First of all, because I had a lot of family around me, and our family was full of love. And Detroit was just full of music, you know. Yeah. It, back then, it was even church music, you know, because I was involved in churches. My mother was a piano player, and my grandfather owned the church. So we was always visiting other churches, singing as a choir, and it was full of religion. And then that went from that, I started singing in the streets with different groups. I just loved singing, always have, even though I never thought singing would be my lifestyle. I always thought I would be an athlete, which I was, and I had a scholarship to college, but I didn't take it because I graduated in 54 in January. Mm-hmm. So Levi and I, who were very good friends, and we sung around with some other little groups. We were invited to a party, and Levi suggested, why don't we get a group instead of just you and I? I said, okay. So we picked Rinaldo Obi Benson and Lawrence Payton, who we knew could sing. Plus, we know they was good with the girls. That's what going to the party was all about. You know, so we asked them to come go with us. And We start singing in the middle of the party. She asked Levi and I to come sing, and we said, "Well, we got a group." She said, "Okay, that's even better." And we told Levi, "Cause we still thinking about the girls. See?
Right.
The singing is the hardest thing in our mind, because we know we can sing. We know Levi's a great lead." So we told him, "Hey, Levi, just pick a song, and we'll back you up." Well, when we started backing him up, it was like our harmonies blended so well together, and we started doing things, and it was like we rehearsed the song for a couple of weeks, and we were all amazed. And right then and there, we said, "Man, this is a group. Let's start this thing."
Were you all singing your own songs?
Own songs. We didn't have no songs. Are you kidding? Shoot, we were just kids out of high school, and we, you know, and it was a long time before we had a song of our own. You know, it was like 9 years of singing professionally before we got to Motown.
So when you were contemplated on being an athlete, you and Levi was singing at football practice or at sporting events?
On the bus going. I was a football player. Mm-hmm. We had everybody singing on the bus, you're right. I ran track. We had everybody singing on the bus there. I played basketball. We had everybody singing with us there. So, you know, we were just like that, and singing was just a lot of fun for us.
The Four Tops was not originally named the Four Tops. Yeah. How did you all get to the Four Tops?
You're absolutely right about that's not being our first name. Our first name was the Four Aims. We wanted our name to signify what we were about. We were aiming for the moon, the stars, you know, to be top flight, to be one of the best groups, because we felt like we could be. And so we kept that name from 1954 when we started to 1956, which was our first real recording contract, and that was with Chess Records. So we were just about to record. We're down in the studio, and Leonard and Phil Chess came down and said, "Well, fellas, I'm sorry to say you're going to have to change your name." I said, "There's a group out there called the Four Aims." I said, "Oh, yeah, I've heard them." I said, "But people going to know the difference between us Aims and the Four Aims." He said, "No, you have to change your name." So our musical director, his name was Morris King, kept asking questions. How do you get the four aims? We started telling him about all the things we were looking for. We're shooting for the stars and trying to get on top, all that kind of stuff. And he said, "Well, what about the Four Tops?" Everybody looked. Jackpot. Said, "That's great. Let's go with it." And that's what it's been.
You remember that first day that you all came to Motown?
Of course. I'll never forget it. I remember walking up the Hitsville steps, because we had been with like three other record companies, and we had finally realized we should be at Motown. You know, this is where we belong. So when we got the call that Barry was interested in us, he saw us on the Tonight Show. We were in New York recording, but we also was on Steve Allen's Tonight Show back then. You know, and he saw us. He said, "You know what?" He was talking to his A&R director, Mickey Stevenson, who we all knew. Well, we knew most of the folks at Motown. He said, "Mickey, can you know the Tops?" He said, "Yeah." He said, "Would you get in touch with him? Tell him I'd like to have him on my label." We were so happy to hear that, because while we were in New York recording, the Motown Review was also at the Apollo. We went and saw that, and we felt to say, "Oh man, we need to be on there. I mean, we could shine." You know, we had a lot of confidence, and we knew we were fairly good. You know,
speaking of the Motown Review, I remember during the holidays going down to the Fox, seeing you all perform. What was it like for you all to come home and perform for the home folks?
That was thrilling. I mean, it was more than exciting, you know, and especially during those holidays, because you got everybody coming, school kids and everybody. And it was just so much fun. Everything at the beginning was so much fun. I mean, even all the way through, don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. But you know how your first time doing this and first time doing that, it's absolutely amazing. We were so happy and thrilled that we were on the label and that we had hits, and we knew we had hits coming, because we could tell Holland Dozier and Holland could write songs, you know. And we was absolutely excited, and it was fun, because, you know, you could be riding to the engagement, and you could hear your song playing on people's car. You know, you go to the store to pick up something, you hear it on the speaker, and said, "Wow, absolutely amazing." You just can't beat that feeling, especially the first times, you know.
When you look back at your career thus far, what was a defining moment, live, venue, and or record?
Well, there's probably a couple. One of the finest that I remember was in New York. at Carnegie Hall. Because at that time, that was one of the finest and most upgraded concert halls you could be there. And that was the first time we had, like, we had 16 strings, full orchestra. And so we was absolutely, totally excited. And I think that we did one of our best shows that night. I mean, it was so good. We all had tears in our eyes. And they gave us a couple of standing ovations. And I'll never forget it. Because going to Carnegie Hall back then in the 60s, I mean, it's like you can't, that was it. That's like a pinnacle. You had reached a pinnacle as far as a concert hall.
Tell us about that friendly competition. I assume it was friendly competition for all the male groups at Motown.
I can tell you about it, and it still exists, you know, because Tops and Temps, we've been traveling together. We've been traveling together since Motown 25, and people still like to see that. And once you're on stage, it's really competitive. I mean, because, you know, if you're not at your best, you're going to get shot down that night. It's just that simple, because the Temptations, you know, they're a fabulous group, man. And I think they feel the same way, so the audience really gets the best out of both of us. But it's great. The competition is friendly, but it is competitive when it comes to the singing and the doing of the music. But aside from that, we're the greatest friends. You know, we eat together a lot. And we play together a lot. You know, we hang out together a lot. And it's just like we're still one family.
Can you put into words what has kept Motown music at the pinnacle of people's attention for going on 50, 60 years?
Yeah. I wish I could answer that, you know, with great knowledge. I can only say that it's music that they fell in love with and they just will not let it go.
Standing in the shadow.
Duke Fekia, founding member of the Four Tops. If you have questions, comments, or suggestions as to future In Black America programs, email us at inblackamerica@kut.org. Also, let us know what radio station you heard this over. Remember to like us on Facebook and to follow us on Twitter. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station or of the University of Texas at Austin. You can hear previous programs online at KUT.org. Until we have the opportunity again for technical producer David Alvarez, I'm Johnny O'Hanson Jr. Thank you for joining us today. Please join us again next week.
CD copies of this program are available and may be purchased by writing In Black America CDs, KUT Radio, 1 University Station, Austin, Texas, 78712. That's In Black America CDs, KUT Radio, 1 University Station, Austin, Texas, 78712. This has been a production of KUT Radio.